alleged nuclear plant. She had been finally awakened from her long sleep by Ryan. Other than her medical talents, Mildred also had an ever more useful skill for survival in the wasteland that had once been the United States of America. In the last ever Olympic Games, Mildred had represented her country in the free pistol shooting, winning the silver medal. Now, with her ZKR 551 six-shot Czech revolver, chambered to take the Smith & Wesson 38 caliber round, she was probably the finest shot in Deathlands. In the past few months, Mildred had begun a relationship with the person next around the circle. John Barrymore Dix, known as JB, or as the Armorer, was about the same age as Ryan and had been his closest friend for the past dozen years or so. JB was the greatest living authority on firearms and weaponry in general. Despite his appearance, 5 feet 8 inches and 140 pounds soaking wet, wearing glasses, his combat experience was almost unrivaled. He sat next to Mildred, his sallow complexion even more pale than usual, his 9mm Uzi and Smith & Wesson M4000 scattergun lying at his side. In his lap, he held his beloved fedora. Squatting next to JB and holding a battered Armalite was a lean, grizzled man in his 50s. Known throughout much of the Deathlands simply as the Traitor, he was the person who'd originally brought Ryan and JB together, enlisting them as young bloods and training them until they became his right and left-hand men. Traitor had found two massively powerful war wags up in the Appalachians and used them in his trading and traveling until he was one of the most feared men in Deathlands. Even the barons of some of the largest vills were wary of upsetting the uncertain temper of Traitor. The diminutive figure next to Traitor, with a drooping mustache, was Abe, once the gunner on War Wag 1. When Traitor had vanished many, many long months ago, it was widely accepted that he'd gone off alone into the woods to kill himself, as he was known to be suffering from a painful and probably terminal rat cancer. Then the whispering started. Traitor had been seen down in Yuma, had killed a whole vill in Peoria, was running a frontier gaudy with 20 beautiful girls somewhere east of Taos. It got so that Abe couldn't stand the rumors and had set off to try to track down his old leader. Eventually, he had succeeded in his quest, locating the grizzled veteran close to the ruins of old Seattle, Washington. The remaining companions in the room were Jack and Doc. Jack Lauren looked as comfortable as if he were relaxing on a goose feather mattress. 16 years old, he was the finest acrobat that Ryan had ever known, as well as being murderously accurate with any of the half-dozen leaf-bladed throwing knives that he kept concealed about his skinny person. He came originally from West Lowellton near Lafayette in the swamps. Ryan and the others had met him when they became involved with Jack's battles against the evil Baron Termal. The albino, with a mane of stark white hair and ruby eyes, had traveled with them for some months, until Jack had met and married Christina Ballinger. The couple had lived happily on a spread in New Mexico, with baby Jenny coming along to cement their love for each other. Then, tragedy had struck, and the woman and child had been butchered. Jack had come to the very brink of suicidal madness, but Ryan and Christy and the others had helped him through the darkness and out once more into the light. Last, and certainly not least of their party, was Dr. Theophilus Algernon Tanner. None of the nine could have been called normal by any acceptable standards, but Doc Tanner was less normal than any of them. The date of his birth was February 14th, 1868, in a white frame house in the pretty hamlet of South Stratford, Vermont. On June 17th, 1891, he had married Miss Emily Chandler. A daughter, Rachel, had blessed their union 2 years later, followed by their ever-smiling little baby boy, Julian, in 1895. Doc, one of whose degrees was in science from Harvard, backed with a doctorate in philosophy from Oxford University, England, had the whole world in his hands. But the American military scientists in the unknowable future had other ideas. First, there was the totality concept, which spawned over Project Whisper, of which Project Cerberus, dealing with the gateways, was an integral part. Another subdivision of the totality concept was Operation Kronos. The slang name for their experiments was trawling. It meant seeking out individuals from the past and using a complex and unreliable variant on the Matran system to pluck them from their own time to the cold research laboratories of the late 1990s. There were many failures. The results of some of the failures were hideous beyond human imagining. There was really only one clear-cut success in all of Operation Kronos: Dr. Theo Tanner. One moment he was in mid-Victorian times with his wife and children, and then, a heartbeat later, he was dragged more than 100 years into the future. But the white coat experimenters came to regret their single success. Having Doc Tanner loose in their organization was more than they had bargained for. He made himself so difficult and obstructive that they eventually resorted to trawling him forward, dumping him nearly 100 years into the Deathlands future, and leaving him there to fend for himself. Had that not happened, he would have died a scant month later, when the skies darkened and the missiles ravaged the world, and a civilization passed away. Now he was one of the exclusive members of the group who traveled with Ryan Cotter. Doc had survived experiences that would have turned most men stark mad, but he had paid a high price for it. Though he was reasonably well-balanced most of the time, there were occasions when the pressure of what had happened to him tipped a part of his acute mind sideways. Now he lay sprawled flat on his back, his mouth sagging open, showing his peculiarly perfect teeth. The huge, gold-embossed commemoration Lamar blaster protruded from its holster on his belt. Ryan slipped away into the brain-churning blackness of the jump, surrounded by his son and his friends, ready to awaken elsewhere.
Hot pipe.
Ryan blinked his eye open. His nostrils were immediately filled with a bitter smell of sickness, and he looked down, taking care not to risk moving his head, to see the Dean had puked during the jump.
My God, boy.
Seeing the small yellow puddle, Ryan felt his own guts heaving in sympathy. He closed his eye again, trying to breathe through his mouth to minimize the stench. The armaglass walls of this particular redoubt gateway were brown, flecked with white, markedly different from the dark gray of the chamber walls back in Maine. Using the techniques that Christie had taught him, Ryan slowed his breathing and pulse. He concentrated his imagination on a wall of untouched blue, using the color to blank his mind, relieving some of the stress of making a jump. Doc and Mildred had once had a bitter argument about what precisely happened during a Matran's jump, going into abstruse scientific theories about reassembled molecules and neutron displacement. All that everyone in the group agreed on was the jumping left you feeling like shit. A little bit less nauseous now, Ryan again risked opening his good right eye. His left eye had been missing since he was a young boy, back in his home Villa Front Royal up in the Shens, courtesy of his cold-heart brother Harvey. The chamber swam mistily back into focus. Now there were signs of life from some of the other members of the group. JB was carefully unfolding his glasses from an inside pocket and replacing them on his sharp nose. He moved so slowly it looked as if he were afraid he might break. Mildred was also recovering, using her sleeve to wipe a thread of spittle from a corner of her mouth. Seeing Ryan watching her, she managed a watery grin.
Oh, the best fun you can have lying down.
Jesus, would you knock it off, Dean?
I love her.
Ryan smiled at Christy and gripped her hand tightly.
How's it going?
Been better. Been worse.
Christy shook her head, the sentient mane of flaming crimson still pressed tightly to her nape. Her face was as pale as wind-washed bone.
On balance, I've been better. Yeah, I have definitely been better.
Trader shook his head like a dog emerging from icy waves.
I'll be hung, quartered, and dried for the crows. I don't reckon I'll ever get used to these bastard jumps. Not ever.
Amen to that, traitor. My mouth feels like a skunk crapped.
did it.
Sorry about being...